Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions, big winners over the Chicago Bears last Sunday, 34-17 winners. This upcoming Monday, Monday Night Football, last Monday Night Football game of the season, the Lions travel to Santa Clara and face the San Francisco 49ers in Levi's Stadium, much less on the line than there was the last time you were in that stadium, where there a football tragedy befell the Lions in the third quarter and en route to the season ending loss to the Niners in the NFC Championship game. There's plenty to talk about. First, we probably should mention that the previous episode, which many people I do get the why they might not never hear this, but the show didn't get posted to the last week's show, the Bears preview show, did not get posted to Apple Podcasts, and there's an issue, and I think we figured it out at this point, and took a while before the show showed up on Spotify. So that's a surprise to us. We've been working with some support folks on that. We think we got it figured out, but you know, in the future, everybody, if we have, you know, a normally scheduled show that you expect coming, and if you don't see it, go check out the website DetroitLionsBreakdown.com. It'll definitely be up there, and hopefully this is moot and it just works well from here on out.
Yeah, that'd be ideal. So it's technology, you know what I mean?
Like, it seems we have a problem once a year. It does
for whatever reason. The website that we go through either alters something and then doesn't inform us that they've altered it, or they run into bugs, or I don't know, whatever it is. But you know, we'll just keep moving along as best we can,
right?
And hopefully everyone gets this one nice and easy, like you said. And you know, I think we should probably kick this off. Just, I don't know, I don't want to talk about the Bears too much, so maybe we'll just knock that out first. Get it out of the way.
All right, let's do it first. Offense played very well. Yeah, just kind of a good game all the way around. But offense looked pretty unstoppable. Bears have pretty good red zone defense. Otherwise, the Lions looked really good. They were able to rack up a bunch of yardage and had a nice big game out of Jameson Williams, out of Jared Goff. You know, good. What do you think about the offensive performance from last Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think everything looked easy. They didn't look like they were stressing too hard. I agree. The red zone defense is the Bears' best asset, but the Lions did not face much adversity during the day. The Bears' defense has really struggled since Eberflus left. The entire team has struggled. I don't know if you caught any of that game against Seattle on Thursday Night Football. What a disaster that was.
True debacle.
Coaching errors galore again. Time mismanagement. I mean, it's just, it's really a microcosm of what the team has been in the last month, actually maybe last couple months. And the Bears didn't look like the team that the Lions faced on Thanksgiving, much less the team that was 4-2. And people were talking about, could they,
and trying to stop a Hail Mary against the Commander.
Exactly. There's a Bears fan who did a Jingle Bell, or a 12 Days of Christmas themed song about all of the Bears losses, starting from the Hail Mary to against the Commanders. It's very funny. I posted it on Twitter, and I'm sure other people could find it. But they are very much going through it, and there's a lot of, they're talking about like Ben Johnson and stuff like that. And, you know, how they're expecting Ben Johnson to be
the new head coach of the Bears. Right, new head coach.
I don't buy that at all. Like, not at all. And, you know, Ben's willing to listen to them, but of course he is. You know what I mean? Potentially a million-dollar job, you're going to listen. But
more than $1 million.
It was several million. Yeah, right. So, I for me personally, I look at the disorganization, the potential lame duck GM, the extra layers of management of who you have to answer to, having multiple bosses for your TPS reports, and it just doesn't seem like a fit for Ben Johnson. If I'm Ben Johnson, if I have my pick of the teams that I can go to, I'm not looking at the Bears and saying this is at the top of my list or anything like that. So, anyway, sidetracked. I got sidetracked there.
No, it's fine. It's going to be something that pops up within the next few weeks.
Yeah, and Ben, and look, his offense showed up, right? Like they played well. They had the 65-yard pass to or was it 80? Jeez, I'm trying to
even, 82.
82 to J-Mo.
Great throw.
They had the stumble bum, a.k.a. stumble
rooski. People are making too big of a deal out of this play. They are.
It was a beautifully designed play to beat the Bears defense, specifically to beat the Bears defense. And everybody, you know, people are like, oh, they wasted it on the Bears. No, it was designed for the Bears. Like Ben Johnson had an idea, they came up with it, it's hilariously ridiculous, and it worked great. And the play in its essence is a tight end corner route, essentially, because Bears run single high, and so you're trying to get a skill player, whether it's tight end or whatever, over the top into that corner of the end zone. And by creating the stumble, you freeze the defenders and you just allow LaPorta to get more open. All they did was the wrinkle of the whole stumble just allows them to pause the linebackers. That play is going to work against that defense because of the defensive design. It's not going to work against Minnesota, like because of how Minnesota runs their scheme, right? But against the Bears, you can execute it, and it was fun. I enjoyed it, and I thought they did a really good job of selling it as well. So a couple of nice highlights, and an easy overall day on offense that had me pretty relaxed for the majority of the game.
Lions had seven different pass receivers, 146 yards on the ground, 336 for Goff in particular, with a losses of 7 yards on sacks. It drags the overall down to 329. So they racked up 475 yards total offense, which is a good day at the park. But you're right. There was no there were no nerves in this game. They got up early, 13-0, which the Lions need to do. Like it's a tale of two teams. If they get up big, like it's hard for almost any team to catch up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything worked out great on the defensive side of the ball. They were able to stop the run, held the Bears to only 59 yards rushing. You know, Caleb can throw against them, but you know, he's playing from behind. He's going to get a big amount of yards.
Yep. Yeah. And he didn't look, I mean, he wasn't again, nearly as proficient as he was on Thanksgiving. I thought the second half in Thanksgiving, he looked very good. And then in this game, he looked disjointed and, out of rhythm. And so, you know, the Lions are in a bend don't break style of defense now. They don't get a lot of pass rush, and so they've got to do certain things really well if you're not getting home. And that means stop the run, and that means cover as long as you possibly can. And they did those things against the Bears, and they held in the 17. And that's going to be good enough most weeks.
Pass rush, we still have some pass rush woes. Lines, they did get a couple of sacks, one from Melifonwu and one from Al-Qadim Muhammad, but they really didn't generate a lot of pressure on Williams.
Correct. Yep. Pascal gets a fumble too, which was helpful from the defensive line. But yeah, it's hard for me to tell. Was it just like they played a lot of quarterback contain in that game because of Williams' ability to scramble? And so I think it was a little challenging for me to ascertain if they were purposefully just playing contain or if they were actually just not getting home. And my guess is it's probably a combination of the both. we know that they're struggling to get home and they have to be creative and they have to blitz. And like you said, Melifonwu got a sack because of that situation, because they blitzed him. And I think they're going to continue to blitz. They blitz upwards of 40% of the time now. And when we talk this week, they're going to need to blitz again. The 49ers are not as good when you blitz them. And so I expect the Lions to keep stacking boxes to stop the run and keep trying to blitz to disrupt the pass. And that's going to be what they do for the rest of the season, most likely.
All right, so that's about it for the Bears game. The win makes the line runs the Lions record of 13-2. The Vikings keep rolling along. They're also 13-2. The Eagles took a
Fall.
loss against the Commanders to drop to 12-3. The Lions have three places where they can go. They could be the one seed, they could be the two seed, which is less likely, or they could be the five seed. If you want to lay it out for everybody listening.
Yeah, so the two seed would take like a very unusual circumstance because it requires like the Lions and the Vikings tying, I believe, in week 18. So the Eagles would need to win, the Vikings and Lions would need to lose this week, and then the Vikings would need to lose or win in the, I'm sorry, the Eagles would then need to win in the final week, and the Lions would have and Vikings would have to tie, and then that would give the Lions the division, but the two seed. The more clean paths are if the Vikings lose to the Packers this week and the Lions beat the 49ers, Lions win the division, Lions win the conference, and they are the number one seed and they get a bye. So we're all going to be Packers fans on Sunday afternoon for
It's crazy.
a brief
First
3 hours. Oh, 100% is the first time ever. And then the little bit longer route is if the Vikings beat the Packers, then the Lions 49ers game is less important as far as playoff implications. Lions are still going to go at it with everything they got. They are teaching a winning mentality and they want to stick with that. And so Lions are still going to go full bore at the 49ers no matter what. But from a playoff perspective, if the Vikings beat the Packers, then it comes down to week 18. If the Lions beat the Vikings, the Lions become the one seed. And if the Vikings beat the Vikings become the one seed and the Lions go to the fifth seed. And they would most likely go to the winner of the AFC South, which would be the Falcons or the Bucks, most likely. So easy. There's two easy paths. They're going to potentially have a shot this Monday night to seal it all up. And if not, they'll have a chance to seal it all up in week 18. Either way, the Lions control their own destiny if they win the right game or win if they win one of those, the right game, depending on the circumstances, they can be the one seed. And I think that's the odds-on favorite thing of it to happen. They're expected to be able to pull it off based on the circumstances that are out there right now.
Lions could potentially be 14-3 and be a two seed, not a two seed, a five seed. Do
Yeah.
you know now that we've only had a few years of the 17 game schedule, the last time a team won 13 or more games and ended up in a wild card position?
No, I don't.
You got to go way. I believe it's 1999 or 2000. I can't remember if it's the 99 season, the 2000 playoffs, or the 2000 season.
Got it.
It's the Jaguars went 14-2, won the old AFC Central, and the Tennessee Titans finished 13-3.
Oh my
And there
goodness.
were only three divisions back then, so they ended up having a home playoff game because they were the first wild card.
Got it. Yep.
And they eventually made it to the Super Bowl where they lost to the Rams, with them the last play of the game.
Infamous, yeah, the half yard
Tackle at the
short or
one,
whatever. Yep.
So there you go. Last time there was a wild card with
Wow.
that good of a record.
Wow.
And the
That
Vikings might be in that same position,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Lions have never been Lions have never had 13 wins before. And
First time for everything.
that's impressive on its own. I want to make sure we don't jump past that. So many firsts this year. So many impressive. The, you know, they set the consecutive win streak record. Now they've set the wins in a season record. It's just
have they ever scored 500 points in a season?
No, they've never even scored 475, if I'm not mistaken, which is what they're at now. They still have two games left too. It's a important for us to just take a breath and smell the roses every once in a while, I think. And so, you know, we'll all get a chance to do it when the season's over, but it's a little harder to do it, you know, if it's, you know, following a loss like last year. Like last year, it was tough to appreciate how good of a season that they had until a while after the fact, because, you know, the loss to San Fran, it was bitter. It hurt. And so make sure we smell the roses here and, you know, can just continue to hope for the best and know that they're on the right path and they still have a really good chance to have a very memorable season. And that hopefully ends in mid-February.
The impossible dream season of 2024. All right. Transactions for the last week. Wave defensive tackle Chris Smith, linebacker Quan Alexander, linebacker David Long. Alexander and Long in particular, I would say, struggled against the Bears. They've been kind of struggling the last couple of weeks. But it's, I mean, same time when I was watching it, I'm like, well, they've only been around for a few weeks. It's not surprising they're struggling out there.
They would like to bring Quan Alexander back to the practice squad. David Long was claimed by the Titans and then failed his physical. Mm. So he was waived again. Alexander did not get claimed. And so he could be back on the practice squad as soon as tomorrow. The Long will have to go through waivers, and because it was today, because it happened on Friday, he won't be eligible to clear waivers until Tuesday after the weekend's games. So he was released a day too late in the process, so he's got to wait for the weekend to conclude. Right now, they don't have any spots available on their practice squad because they signed Maurice Alexander, Chris Smith, who was released, then they added him, and then they added Deron Gilbert. But I also think if Quan is available, they might, you know, move on from a guy like Gilbert, who they just added, and then add Quan back. It wouldn't be surprising to me at all. But releasing Smith, Alexander, and Long opened up three roster spots, and they've only filled one of them. So they still have two roster spots open. Two of those roster spots could be used for a player returning from injury. They could be used for a elevation from the practice squad for this weekend's game, or maybe even, you know, add another free agent. So the one roster spot, though, that they claimed. Do you want to talk about anything else before we get to the signing that they made this week, or do you have you want anything to say about the other guys, or do you want to just
no? I don't. I've already said my piece on the other guys. I think the big mm-hmm. news signing is Florida high school state championship head coach Teddy Bridgewater signing with the team to be a reserve quarterback.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a mixed bag of perception here. Some people are saying this is it's a knock against Hendon Hooker, or a lack of confidence in Hendon Hooker. I think Dan Campbell squashed those perceptions pretty firmly on Thursday. He was very adamant that it has nothing to do with how Hendon is playing. They have full confidence in Hendon. They believe Hendon would even see the field if Jared Goff was injured for some reason. And so they fully believe in Hendon. But the Lions have been very nervous about quarterback depth going back a couple of years now. Do
Sure,
you
the
remember?
David Blau years.
Well, but I'm thinking specifically in the playoffs. So remember 2 years ago when the 49ers had two of their quarterbacks were injured and they didn't have the third emergency quarterback rule in place. And so the 49ers were in the playoffs with no quarterback. And then the Lions proposed a rule that you could add a third quarterback, and then they've tried to amend that rule, even last season. The Lions seem, for whatever reason, very nervous about having this third quarterback. And so that's completely what this move is about. Well, not completely, but mostly. This is about giving the Lions depth at quarterback with a player they trust. Even if it's in a third emergency quarterback role, they know that they at least have another option that they can trust in the playoffs. He's also an incredible leader. He's also good for the locker room. He's also a great mentor. He's also going to be a potential NFL coach at some point, I'm sure, in the near future. These are all extra things that he's really, really good at. But they're so nervous about that third quarterback role, or they've at least give the appearance of being nervous, that they've, proposed these rules, and now this signing seems to line up with that. It's we need to have an insurance option in case our first two quarterbacks go down. And now they do. Now they have Teddy in place with Goff and Hendon, and this collective three is going to be the trio they feel confident in for their Super Bowl run. The other stuff is just great. It's just, if you lose Ben Johnson in the offseason and he takes a couple members of the Lions staff, well, Teddy's a guy you might want to bring in to fill in for that maybe next year, right? Like there's a path for him to keep doing what he's doing in the Lions organization. I know like Ben is really enamored with JT Barrett, who's the assistant quarterbacks coach. And if he goes with Ben, that's a natural spot for Teddy to jump into. And then, he gives you that leadership, a way of communicating to players. He can pressure the defense while also supporting the offense. There's just layers and layers of what he does beyond a third emergency quarterback role or backup role or whatever it is. So it's a good signing. It has impact now, later, and even in the future. And so it's a smart decision, and I have no qualms about it at all. I think it's a smart decision for what they're trying to accomplish.
All right. Injury reports.
I wanted to hear your opinion.
Oh, it is to me. I know he says it's not, but it's definitely a vote of no confidence for Hendon
Okay.
Hooker.
All right.
Not like
What
I
if?
do get why they brought him back. I do kind of get. I'm sure Goff is comfortable studying with him. I'm sure they like having him around. I'm sure he's a leader in the clubhouse. Hendon Hooker's saying all the right things too. He's the guy he always calls. He spends time with them in the off season, but I don't know. And they alluded to like they were planning this all along, right? Like he was going to come back even though he quote unquote retired last season. I don't know. It's fine. I mean, I'm not against it at all. Bring him in. He's the backup quarterback now.
What if he's the third quarterback? Do you still think it's a vote of no confidence?
Well, obviously not then, but I'll think they'll if they are in the playoffs and Goff gets hurt, I bet they would turn to Teddy Bridgewater first. We'll see. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. I guess I'm hoping it's a question we never find the answer out to.
Right. Now we
All
can
right.
move on. Injury reports. There's another one where I'm a conspiracy theorist about running back David Montgomery, knee injury, didn't practice Thursday or Friday.
I mean, he's coming back in
He's coming back.
the report is, the expectation is
No, I, yeah.
he should be coming back for the divisional round, which would mean if the Lions have a bye, he would be ready for their, or he would potentially be ready for their first playoff game. If the Lions don't have a bye, they'd need a win in order to get him for their second playoff game. So that's the expectation there. So we got a little bit more clarity this week on the injury. The first doctor said it's a problem. You're going to need surgery. And then the second one said, you'll be okay, just rest. And then they got a third doctor, and the third doctor said, you're going to be okay, just rest. And so that's what they're going with. They're going with two out of the latter two doctors saying you can recover, you can rest, and it'll rehab itself in about 4 weeks, and then you can hopefully prepare and return for the divisional round. So that's the expectation. We'll see. They got a lot of guys. They got five guys that are probably in that, should be returning over the next 2 months. And so which of those five come back and when? Well, we'll find out. But he should, or I think there's actually might be six, but he's in that group of players that they're hoping and expecting to come back during the playoff run.
You like that meme, of course, with the third doc, the picture of the third doctor.
Yeah.
Montgomery. It was just Dan Campbell dressed as a doctor.
Yeah, it's very clever. People are very clever with their memes. I wish I had that much talent.
All right. I don't want to sell these people short. There is a talent, yes. But it's also, I think, spare time. You got to have a good amount of spare time, I think, too.
Yeah, it's certainly correct.
All right. Wide receiver, Khalif Raymond.
Khalif Raymond. Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Hamstring, I wrote it injury, wrong. Full practice Thursday and Friday, but he's still on injured reserve, so we may not see him on Monday.
Yeah, they say he's, Campbell said he wasn't expecting him back this week, but it's possible. But he was saying he didn't expect him. Couple of full practices, usually 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks is the expectation. Like Reeves Maben was on the return for 2 to 3 weeks. Khalif Raymond should be on this. We're expecting for 2 weeks. You know, Broderick Martin earlier in the season was on for three. If he was on for three, so we'll see. I'm sorry, not if he. If he was on for three the first time, and then he was only on for one the second time, so most of the time it's 2 to 3. You every once in a while it's just 1 week, so it'd be a bit unusual for Khalif Raymond to come back this week, but not unheard of. But Campbell basically said expect him for the Vikings game as opposed to the 49ers game.
Left guard Graham Glasgow, knee injury, full practice Thursday, Friday. Has he lost his job?
Dan Campbell says no. And he said that at the beginning of the week that he expected Graham to be fully healthy, practicing in full all week, which he has been. And then he would start against the 49ers. And all things track to that being true. I think Mahogany had a very good game. And I think Mahogany has shown that there's a lot of starter-level talent that he has in his bag there. And if we go into the offseason and let's say they re-sign Kevin Zeitler and Mahogany and Glasgow still under contract, and then Mahogany and Graham battle it out for a starting role, I think that'd be just fine by me. And I think Mahogany has the upside to be a really good guard in the NFL, and it could be another just real knockout of the ballpark draft pick for Brad Holmes.
Feather in his cap for another Brad one. Holmes. So it was one game, but it is a very good sign. This is a team, albeit 13-2, but hasn't gotten a lot of very good signs over the last few weeks. Certainly a bright spot emerging here.
Yeah, look, the expectation when you watched him in college was he's a pro-ready guard. He runs a pro system. He's got pro-level talent. I had a third run grade on him, and I thought that's where he would go. And the fact that he dropped to the sixth, that, you know, people are suggesting injury and whatnot. I think he could end up looking like a real steal, especially if he comes in and starts like he looks like he has the potential. Now, yeah, like you said, just one game. He's still got to gain experience before you're going to just turn the keys of the car over to him. But, man, he looked good. I mean, he's quick off the ball. He looked for work. A couple times he helped out some of his blocking, you know, teammates while they were blocking somebody and just knocked guys on their butts. And, like, good movement, good pulling, good getting out in front on screen. So he showed a lot of lateral mobility, showed good power, lots and lots of stuff that when you watched him at Boston College and you said, man, the skills are there. And he looked better than I expected him to by quite a bit. And so I was real happy. I was real happy with Mahogany. But they trust Graham a lot. And Graham has been good. And maybe that, you know, it sounds like he's been dealing with this injury for a bit, and maybe that's added to some of the struggles he's had this year. Graham's also 32, so that factors in. So maybe this little break that he took last week will be enough to get his body right, and maybe he'll be able to, you know, bounce back and be ready to go. If not, they know what they have in Mahogany.
They've got a guy.
Yeah.
Linebacker, Jalen Reeves-Maven, neck injury, full practice Thursday and Friday, still on injured reserve, but.
Yeah, he's expected to come back this week. With the two spots they have open, he's expected to claim one of them. So, you know, I think it's very obvious that they're expecting him to come back, not just because they've kind of hinted at it, but also because they've released two linebackers, right? Like, you're not going to release two linebackers if you're not expecting a linebacker to come back, right? They play with six linebackers every week. Right now, they have five. And so it's expected to be Reeves-Maven to come back and be the, you know, the sixth. And my expectation is he will probably start at will. And, you know, he'll hold down the fort for maybe a week, and then Alex Anzalone might come back next week. And he could be a guy that, like, starts practicing on at the beginning of the week, and by the end of the week, he's ready to go versus the Vikings type of thing. So I do think he's going to be a very quick return when it happens, but I think it's going to be Reeves-Maven this week.
Is he going to – so
I think he's going to start.
On defense? All right,
yeah, I think he's going to start it. Yeah.
Cornerback, Tarion Arnold, illness, did not practice Thursday, limited on Friday.
It's just sick. He is on TikTok and Instagram all the time talking about how he can't adjust. He hasn't adjusted to the cold yet. He's buying jackets from Old Navy and expecting those to keep him warm. And my guy's got to go get like a North Face coat or a Carhartt or something to keep him a little bit warmer. Sure. There's lots of brands out there beyond Old Navy. No offense to Old Navy, but Old Navy is more fashion than
function.
Thank you. So he's got to get something. Somebody's got to hook him up because this guy is wearing. He's not wearing Michigan weather attire. And so not at all surprising that he came down with a little something. But he should be good to go. I don't think there's really any concerns about him right now.
There's not a teammate that can help point him in the right direction.
There's
nobody
be.
On the staff.
Somebody has to see one of his TikToks and be like, listen, Tarion, buddy. You have lots of money. Spend more than like $60 on an Old Navy coat and buy something, you know, reasonable that can keep
you warm.
You
should take one of those big jackets home with them that they wear, you know, in cold games.
Exactly.
Over the shoulder pads, just this
yes.
coat on them.
He needs somebody to take him to an outlet store and get him some proper attire. So lots of places that sell really nice stuff, and he's just got to get to one.
All right. Let's talk 49ers.
All right.
Game's going to be Monday night, 8:15 p.m. for us in Detroit. And on the Eastern Seaboard, it'll be 5:15 out on the West Coast. Lions favored by 3.5. Weather, it's going to be a clear day in San Francisco. High of 57, low of 42. I would assume we'll be sitting on more of the low end of that scale once game time. Well, 5:15, I don't know. It'll probably be in the 50s still. But definitely creeping more towards 42 as the game wears on. Levi's, I probably said Levi's Stadium 8 times. Not in San Francisco proper, but way down in Santa Clara, as Eric knows well, with more near San Jose, down at the south end of the bay. It's going to be an ESPN crew calling the game. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salter's down on the field. No Manning cast for this one. They stay away from
No.
Lions games.
Yeah, they didn't do one last week either because of the doubleheader, and I think they're doing their last one in the wild card, and then that'll be a wrap for the Manning cast as well. So yeah, this is the last, like, as you mentioned earlier, this is the last Monday night. We've already seen the last Thursday night game, and the Manning cast will do the one Monday night game in the wild card round, and then that'll be it for them, and that'll be it for Monday after that. And so, we're still going to see next week. We're still going to see Saturday and Sunday games. But as is tradition, in the final week, they try and glom everything together over just those couple of days, so that they,
Nobody gets a fair or unfair rest advantage
And
or disadvantage.
You want some intensity
You want to
amongst
build some drama
seating.
too.
Yeah, exactly. So, Lions get the last Monday night game of the season, and depending on how things shake out, they might end up being in the last game of the regular season as well, if they end up having to, because that Vikings game has not been settled. It has not been assigned a time yet, and
We
there's a
know the
few.
Vikings are winning. We know that game's going to be Sunday Night Football over because the Rams play Seahawks too, right? And that still might be in doubt,
Yes.
right? But I
Yes.
would assume it's going to be Lions Vikings.
So the Rams play the Cardinals, and the Rams need to beat the Cardinals, and then they need like four teams out of a specific six teams. They need four of them to win in order to get the tiebreaker. And if three of those teams, win, or if they lose to the Cardinals, then that sets up a NFC West title championship game as well. And as we
For
mentioned,
playoff spot
for
or no playoff spot,
correct.
basically.
Yeah, you're in or you're out.
Winner take all.
Right. And
Loser
that's
leaves town. I like that better.
so like if the Vikings lose to the Packers and then the Lions clinch in San Francisco, then that game will almost assuredly be flexed, because it's a bit of a long odds for LA to be able to clinch this week. So then that'll go into the win or go home type of game, or win or leave town, as you said,
No, it's
type of
lose or
us
leave town, and it
loser
doesn't
leave town.
make any
Sorry.
sense. But winner take all makes more sense. Lose or leave town, because the loser may be the home team, there'd be no reason to leave town.
So,
Or the
there's
winner would leave town in that case.
it's a couple of unique scenarios, but I definitely think if they have a opportunity to put a this team wins the one seed, they're going to put that game in the Sunday night spot. So we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. I'm hoping for a an easy week 18.
Now, we usually reserve this for the end of the show, but I guess like we're talking about times of games, and I'll bring this up now. How do you feel about the recent NFL scheduling? Like, and just the scheduling of football in general. Two games on a Wednesday on Christmas, throwing two games. Well, because they had to do the games on Christmas. They put the games in direct competition with three duds of college football playoff. But that was a big Saturday of football there.
Yeah. Jeez. And they had to do Saturday before that because they had to get those. They had to get the teams that were playing on Christmas an extra day as well.
Well, that's
so they,
what I was. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant this game.
No,
I
not
thought you
this
meant the
upcoming
Saturday tomorrow.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Well, yeah. It's going to be the same scenario. Tomorrow, Saturday as well.
Exactly.
I don't know
exactly.
if the college football games will be duds or not.
I tell you, the NFL is a juggernaut, and the college football playoffs had no chance of matching what college football does. For example, the game that was opposite the Ravens game, the college game, I think it was Texas, whoever Texas was playing. Texas game started before the Ravens game. The Ravens game ended like an hour earlier than the college game did. And it was like a close, fun game, whereas the college game was this 4.5 hour blowout that wasn't competitive at all. And so college football didn't do itself any favors with this current format and the length of their games that they have. Like, the NFL has a very tight ship, money machine, great product, and they can put it up against anybody and just smash them. They put the, you know, NBA has
five NBA games.
Five NBA games on Christmas just got demolished by two NFL games. Like, it just, it wasn't a competition. They had over 25 million viewers per game
Netflix
for each
of
those games.
Outlets.
Right. And like, that volume of viewership, there's no way they're going to shift off of that. At least next year, it'll be on a Thursday. Christmas will be on a Thursday. So, you know, they can kind of stick with what their schedule is. But I can tell you right now, I don't like it personally, because with the Lions being good, it's not going to, at some point, they're going to put the Lions on a Christmas day. And then
ruining your day.
Well, I can tell you, my wife is not going to approve of that.
I like how you're whispering that.
Well, I just in case.
I know.
Just,
I got
just in case she's listening. Yeah. And so, geez.
That's the thing. We were joking about that on Christmas Day when you watch those games, and you know, you got your sold out stadiums, and it's like, you know, this isn't tradition. You know, like, at least the Cowboys and the Lions, like, those people that go to those games, like, oh, this is family tradition. This is tradition. Whereas this Christmas Day game, it's like, yeah, we're not going to come to dinner because we're going to be at the football game, which, I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, I'm sure some families will provide a lot of guilt over doing something like that, but most people, enjoy the game.
You know, I think if you had, you know, if there was a plan and you had the family involved, and or if you bring in the family, there's ways to make it an enjoyable experience. But there's a lot of vendors that have to go to these games and work. There's a lot of maintenance people that have to go to these games and work. Security people have to go to these, you know, like, there's so many people that have to go to these games in order to make them function. And yes, there's a lot of them that maybe,
yeah, they too,
you know, have a that maybe don't celebrate Christmas, and they celebrate another, you know, a different holiday this time
or
of year.
Maybe
and
no holiday,
or no, exactly, and that's great. And if you then, you know, for those individuals, maybe they don't care at all. But for people who do, you know, it's certainly an inconvenience, and maybe they give time and a half and stuff like that because you're working on a holiday, and you know, maybe there's ways to do it. But man, it certainly seems like it's a situation where the billionaires in the NFL are making, you know, $150 million on this, and the everyday
splitting it 32 ways.
Yeah. But then the everyday Joe is, you know, getting time and a half to not be with his family on a holiday that maybe he or she celebrates. And so I think it's tough. It's a tough thing. If, even if it was just one game, I think it would be tough. Having two makes it double, right? But yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. I can tell you that I put the game on my television. I can also tell you that because I was spending time with my family and my kids, and so I really didn't even watch much at all of either game, even though they were on. I was with my family and enjoying my time. And so, like, I didn't even really get to watch it. And so, you know, like you said, there's tradition when you have it on other holidays. And so, you know, people go in with expectations. With this, like, I'm welcoming guests into my home at different times. We're unwrapping presents. I'm trying to help my kids get their stuff, get batteries and everything in the world that they get nowadays, right? And I really didn't get a chance to watch the games much, just at a glance. So I didn't really enjoy them myself. So, but I can tell you what, the money they're making, I don't expect it to go away.
You got very existential, maybe a little too deep for this podcast, but I'm picking up what you're putting down. You are against the football on the Christmas, which I mean I was fine with it. We were watching it where I
Sure.
was at, you know, because there was waiting for food, and then
Sure,
there
sure,
was the
sure, sure.
post eating of the food when everybody when you know I wasn't one of them because I remained standing. And you know, like and talking, but anybody who made it back to that couch to start watching, they were all asleep, you know, within a few minutes. Like, so there was a lot of sleeping on the couch while watching the football game, which, hey, that's Christmas. You know, because
Right.
a lot of old and young people who, you know, the old people, they need their naps. The young people need
Oh,
to
yeah.
they stayed up too late the night before, maybe woke up a little too early and want to get the nap in, you know, while they're
Sure.
enjoying Christmas. I'm fine with the football. Yeah, but I do get that, you know, football on a Wednesday. Yeah.
It was
I
hard.
could go either way. I enjoy watching football, so I
Yeah.
really don't care what day it's on. But yeah, Christmas, yeah. All right. Tomorrow. Chargers, Pats, Broncos, Bengals. Neither game really matters to us. Cardinals, Rams, you discussed that.
Yeah.
Ideal for us. There's a ton of college football on tomorrow, highlighted by Iowa State, Miami tomorrow at 3:30 in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Maybe more so for what the Pop-Tarts going to do. That was the big sensation last year.
People loved it.
Yeah, Alamo Bowl, BYU and Colorado at 7:30 p.m. A weird matchup of two teams from the same conference, which is a little mind-boggling. Got and then Army playing Louisiana Tech Independence Bowl 9:15 p.m. We saw Navy today beat Oklahoma in the Armed Forces Bowl. So, like, maybe there's some interest what Army is doing tomorrow. All right, let's moving on for that. So,
Okay.
no playoff, no college football playoffs. Those are going
Right.
to be on New Year's Day and everything. We missed that a little bit ago. All right, referee for the game against the Niners. Sorry about that, everybody. Sean Hockley,
Yeah.
he ref Lions Colts. The calls were in the Lions' favor, 2-1. He's
Yeah.
averaging 14.43 penalties per game, 1.5 above league average.
Yeah, he called 15 penalties in that Colts game, 10 against the Colts, 5 against the Lions. He's a little flag happy, but you know, he's not unreasonable, so you'll live with it.
Right, Niners are 6-9, lost five out of their last six games. Their only win coming over the slumping Bears.
Yeah.
So, in those five games, they lost to the Seahawks, Packers, Bills, Rams, and Dolphins. So, a couple of real good teams in there.
The stat that I found most interesting over this losing streak is that they've really just been unable to finish as an offense. Can't finish drives, are struggling to score points, missing field goals, not finding success in the red zone. They average on the season 22.1 points a game, which is right around league average. But if you look over the last six games, they've only been averaging around 16.3 over the last six games. If you look at the five games that they lost, they were only averaging 12 points scored in the five losses. So they're really struggling offensively. And when we get into their roster breakdown, we'll be able to elaborate on that a little bit more.
DVOA rankings, Lions are sitting at number two. 49ers, surprisingly, at number 11. Lion offense at number four. Sixth throwing the ball, third running the ball. Niners defense is number seven overall, fifth against the pass, and 24th against the run. So we can highlight something there. Defensively, the Lions are ranked fifth, fourth against the pass, and 10th against the run. Whereas the Niners defense is, the Niners offense is 10th overall, eighth throwing the ball and 13th running the ball. Lions special teams number two. 49ers special teams ranked number 31, a team that normally prides themselves in their special teams.
So if we look back to the last 6 weeks, like we just did with the points, we see a much different DVOA output. We're talking about them not being 11th, but being 17th, more middle of the road, 16th on offense instead of 10th, right? So you're dropping six spots. In the passing game, you're dropping from 8 to 13. In run game, you're dropping from 13 to 18. So you're dropping like 5, 6 points pretty much across the board. You see the same thing on defense, right? As well, it's a little bit more prominent, dropping from 5th to 16th, and dropping from, I'm sorry, 7 to 16, dropping from 5th to 5 against pass defense, which is really their strength, to 15th. Again, all kind of middle of the road scores, all kind of like 5 to 6 or more drops in their DVOA. So overall on the season, they're 11, which is, very respectable. But really, the last 16 games, they've been a very average team, and I'd say almost significantly worse in every category as far as DVOA goes. So not quite as daunting of a task as you would think based on their season-long DVOA numbers.
All right, let's talk about their lineup. Now, the Niners have a bunch of injury issues, but only 13 guys on IR, so nothing like what the Lions have been dealing with this season. So, starting at the quarterback position for Kyle Shanahan. Well, before we go to the quarterback position, we got Kyle
Sure.
Shanahan's the head coach. He's also the offensive play caller. All starts with him. People wonder if his job's in jeopardy. I don't know.
It's
I would say he
weird.
gets a pass this season because of
Yeah.
the injuries. But at the same time, I never liked Shanahan, so they
Oh.
fire him is fine with me.
I think it's premature. I'm with you. I think he's a good coach. He's done well. He's put him in the couple Super Bowls that they've
Sure.
lost, a couple NFC Championship games. This is certainly a down year, but it'll just he needs to rebound for certain. The biggest concern I would have if I was Kyle Shanahan is I've got to get my defense right, because I think getting the pieces on offense back from IR, because that's really where the majority of their IR has been. It's on offense. If they get those guys back, the offense should rebound. But their defense, it hasn't regressed because of injury. There's been some, but they've kind of regressed just in general. And this is something that we've seen happen with this scheme in previous years. Just to kind of like overview, Shanahan is their de facto offensive coordinator. They don't have an offensive coordinator on their staff. They have Chris Forrester, who was their co-offensive coordinator last year, but he's really just a run game coordinator. Everything kind of falls on Shanahan for the offense. On defense, they're on their fourth defensive coordinator under Shanahan, but all four defensive coordinators have run the exact same offense or defense that Shanahan wants them to run, which is essentially a version of the old Seattle defense, the Legion of Boom defense, which is a lot of zone coverage and aggressive four-man fronts and keeping things in front of you and then being aggressive in the secondary and making plays. And so, like in Seattle, the defense can get figured out over time. And if you don't adapt that defense, then you have the potential to become you have the potential to regress is essentially where I'm going with this. And so I think we might be witnessing this. I think we might be witnessing a regression of the defense because people are kind of figuring it out. And it's not as impactful because there's certainly talented players there, but they're just not, you know, they're not finding success with young players like they used to. They've lost some key players. Their defensive line is not as stout as it used to be. They used to heavily invest in their defensive line. That's not true this year. And so the defense is really the area that I think they're going to have to shore up if Shanahan wants to stick around. There are a lot of people, like you said, that are calling for his head, which is very surprising to me because I think his history should warrant him some extra time.
A lot of, if you look through the coaching roster, there's a lot of nepotism through there. Brian Greasy, the quarterback's coach, but he was an NFL quarterback. It's hard to put him as a nepotism hire. Kyle Shanahan, of course, is one of Clay Kubiak, offensive passing game specialist. Mick Lombardi, senior offensive assistant.
Pause you for a second. Kubiak's brother was the co-offensive coordinator last year before he left as well. And Shanahan
grew up with those guys because of
exactly
Gary Kubiak and the Broncos.
Yeah, because Gary Kubiak was offensive coordinator for his dad for a long time as well. And so, yes, they all grew up together, all these guys. So they all know each other beyond the football field.
So, and this is where Brandon Staley landed after being fired by the Chargers. He's the assistant head coach.
But again, if you follow the coaching tree, Staley comes from McVay's system and McVay comes from Shanahan's system, his dad's, and then worked with Kyle for all those years. So, yeah.
Defensive line coach, former Lion Chris Koshurek, right?
Yep.
Was he the Wendy's parking lot guy? I don't want to
get this wrong.
Which one was that? What was his name?
It was one of the offensive coaches. It was one of the
I thought it was the defensive line coach. I could be.
No, it wasn't Koshurek.
Why am I arguing with you? You're the one who knows. You're the bright one here.
Koshurek has always been a very good he's always been very solid and he only left because when they switched from like a four man front and he left like when I think it was like when Caldwell left essentially. So maybe a little bit before, but I know him and like Terrell Austin, they were around to at the same time.
The coach was Joe Cullen.
Yeah, offensive coach, right?
Defensive line coach. Oh, he's currently the defensive line coach of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, geez. I got it wrong, but I knew it was not Koshurek.
Yeah, all right. So that was my fault. All right. San Francisco 49ers.
It's good trivia. It's good trivia.
Stuff's drifting away as we get older. All right. Niners depth chart, quarterbacks Brock Purdy, who's a Pro Bowler last year. He's staring at a massive contract extension. He gave his linemen Toyota trucks, but that's he's a spokesperson for Toyota. So he makes less than $1 million this year. So it seems that Toyota gave his linemen those trucks some good PR.
Yes.
Brandon Allen's the backup. Joshua Dobbs, third stringer. Purdy suffering through his worst season of his career, but the team is suffering as well. He's really not the cause of their woes.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's a good quarterback. He's had to work more off platform than he's had to in previous seasons because of some of their injuries. He's had to run more this season, especially at the end of this season, than he has in previous years. And so he's definitely had to adapt, and he has not been as efficient as he has been in past seasons, but he still hasn't had a bad year despite the litany of injuries on the offensive side of the ball.
So that leads us to the running backs, where there has been a litany of injuries. Isaac Garrido has been the starter recently, but he's listed as questionable for Monday's game. You also have Patrick Taylor Jr., Israel Abanaconda, on the roster. Of course, famously, Christian McCaffrey out for the season and on injured reserve.
And his backup was Jordan Mason, who was having a nice season. He's also on injured reserve. So, yeah, Garrido is a rookie, and he's not bad, but he's not. He shouldn't be starting right now. And then when he's injured on top of that, Taylor had to start last week, and I think they gave him 8 touches is what they gave him. Like, because they're like, we're on running back 4. He was not very good in pass pro, and so if you're the Lions, you want to blitz. You do anyway, so just keep doing it. Garrido has been limited in practices this week, so it's possible he returns. It's also possible he doesn't. He's kind of on the fence as far as the injury reports have been. But regardless, neither of them are as effective as Mason or McCaffrey, and it's not really close either. Some of that has to do with the injuries on the offensive line, making things even harder, but they've really split the rushing duties between the a collection of people. For example, they ran the ball last week 18 times. 8 of them went to the traditional running back Taylor. 5 of them went to Debo. 4 of them were Purdy. And 1 of them went to fullback Kyle Juszczyk. So they're not just handing the ball off to the running back and saying, you know, let's go. They did that with Mason when McCaffrey went down, but they really just don't have that talent on the roster at running back or blocking in front of them either. I think they have some talent, but it's all developmental talent that is, in my opinion, not really ready to take a starting role.
All right. So Taylor had 8 rushes for 24 yards, 1 reception for 1 yard. You mentioned the fullback, the starting fullbacks, Kyle Juszczyk, who's also listed as questionable. The traditional fullback, but at the same time, he gets some touches too. You know, over his career, he averages about a reception per game, or maybe almost 2 receptions per game. Gets a few carries here and there.
Yeah, he always leaks out and gets 1 reception for like a big game. He plays more now as well, because of their, like, they run a, so they still run 11 personnel. So 1 running back, 1 tight end, 3 receivers. They still run that more than they run anything else, but they run that about 46% of the time. What they run more than anybody is 21 personnel, which is the 1 running back, 1 fullback, 1 tight end, and then 2 wide receivers. They run that 36% of the time, which is by far first in the NFL. To give you a reference, Lions run that 21 personnel less than 2% of the time, and they are in the middle of the pack at 16. So the fact that they run it 36% of the time is really an astounding number. So because of that, Juszczyk gets anywhere from 35 to 50% of these snaps. Sometimes he's the back there by himself. Sometimes he is in working in unison with one of the other backs, but they use Juszczyk more than they use like their tight end too. They only run like 2 tight end sets like 7% of the time. So they use Juszczyk 5 times more than they use their tight end too.
All right. wide receiver group, you mentioned Deebo Samuel. They also have Juwan Jennings, Ricky Pearsall, who's healed from his gunshot wound, Jacob Cowing, and Chris Conley. Of course, Brandon Ayuk is on injured reserve.
The Ayuk injury has really limited their ability to attack downfield. They don't do that as often. So you're struggling to run the ball in recent games because of your injuries. And then you don't have your deep threat. You don't have your traditional, you know, wide receiver one body type guy. And so now you're left with a bunch of gadget guys. You got Deebo, who's a gadget guy. We'll get to Kittle in a minute, and then Juszczyk, and then your collective of running backs that you have. And so they're more, they've really evolved more into a, let's play the short game. Let's play the inner, let's, you know, maybe go intermediate. Let's just try and get the ball in our skill players' hands and let them do something. Lots of screens. Those are more in the avenue of what their offense does now, as opposed to just taking deeper shots like they used to. They used to be a very aggressive offense that had lots of big plays, and the injuries have limited that. Again, we'll talk more about, we're going to get the offensive line here in a second, but the offensive line has also limited that as well. So this combination of things, missing bodies, and has altered their ability to execute on offense. And then because you have new bodies, because you don't have some of the high-end talent, you end up with less execution. And you aren't having success on third downs. You're not having success on fourth downs. You're not converting in the red zone. Those are all, like, hindrances and results of lack of talent because of injury, and just an adjustment to their offensive scheme that has really limited their effectiveness.
Tight end group, team leading receiver George Kittle, Eric Sauber, Braden Willis, and Jack Tonjes.
So Kittle's probably the best tight end in the NFL, right? Mm. Like I think he's. Is he? I mean, it's him or Kelsey, right? Or Brock Bowers or Laporta?
Well, it's probably Brock Bowers already.
Yeah, just maybe.
Like that.
Well, Brock Bowers is certainly a better.
And he's got a bigger future because Kittle and Kelsey are old.
But Kittle is the perfect collection of the ability to catch the ball, create yak, and he still blocks, which I think is a skill Bowers is still developing. I think Laporte is a better blocker, and he can be more of a balanced tight end. When Kelsey and Kittle leave, I think we'll be talking about Laporta and Bowers as the top two guys for a while now. But I think Kittle's the best one right now. Kelsey's kind of aging, in my opinion. He's a good target. He's you know, a fun personality, but I don't think he's as complete a package as George Kittle is. And, you know, Kittle will be a problem. He's a guy that the Lions are going to have to account for. But when you look at the fact that the 49ers offense has, you know, more checkdowns, and you know, more inter, you know, they're working in the short to intermediate areas, you can crunch your defense down a little bit. I didn't talk as much about the receivers. I probably should have. Like Juwan Jennings, I think, is having a good year. He can be a little bit more vertical. Purcell is a rookie. He's still kind of learning. Samuel, we know, is this gadget guy. But Kittle and Samuel tend to be the top two targets. As you said, he's their leading receiver. Samuel is the guy they lean on a ton, and it's really those two. Purcell will be someone good down the road. Juwan Jennings can make a big play. But really the offense is heavily focused on Kittle and Samuel. And so that's where I think the Lions' focus will be. Obviously they're going to want to stop the run like they always do, but Samuel and Kittle are really the ones they'll have to worry about more, And maybe that leads to Juwan Jennings having some more success because they're focusing on, you know, Debo and Kittle. But that tends to be how it works out. When you only have a couple of scary options, some of the lower, you know, the more unexpected guys will show up. Even though Jennings has, like I said, had a good really good season.
All right.
None of the other tight ends really do much, but I kind of explained that when I talked about Juszczyk, right? Like, yeah. Eric Sauerbraut sees less than 30% of snaps at best. And so they just don't find the field that often. I think Sauerbraut caught his first touchdown pass of the season last week. But it's just because they don't get used.
49ers offensive line from left to right, with Trent Williams being out for the season on injured reserve. Left tackles listed as Spencer Burford, who's also listed as questionable. Left guard Nick Zakalij. Center Jake Brendel. Right guard Dominic Pooney. And right tackle also listed as questionable, Colton McKivitz.
All right, so bear with me here for a minute.
Yep.
Trent Williams is their, you know, all-pro left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
He went on IR this week. His backup is Jalen Moore, who also went on IR this week. When Jalen Moore went down, they turned to Burford. Burford is injured and has not practiced this week at all. Okay? So now he is questionable to play. And if he doesn't play, they're really in trouble, because McKivitz, their right tackle, was limited on Monday and did not practice. I'm sorry, limited on Thursday and did not practice on Friday, which is usually an indicator of him suffering a midweek injury. And if when you do that limited followed by a did not participate, that usually means you got injured on that limited day. And if he got limited and could not participate and he's not ready, well, they are pretty much out of offensive tackles. They have a couple of back. Yeah, I mean, they just signed an offensive tackle this week. I can't tell you what his name is. They have a couple on maybe on the practice squad. I think Pleasance is another one they have on the roster. But this is bad news for them, because they
is
were.
It?
No, they turned.
Every time we face a team that has some sort of big injury deficiency on their roster, they always seem to keep it, hold it together against us.
Well, let's keep going then. Aaron Banks, their starting left guard, he has Shanahan has said he is out and will not play this week. His backup is Ben Bartsch. Ben Bartsch is on IR as well. And so now they're turning what did you say? Sackle or something like that?
Zackles. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, is now going to be. He's like their third option at guard. So at tackle, they may not have option four on the roster, right? Or maybe they just signed option four this week. At guard, they're on option three. At center, Brendel is playing because Feliciano is on IR. So that they're already on their backup center. Pooney is a rookie, third-round rookie. And like I said, if McKivitz doesn't play. So this offensive line, if they continue to trend in this direction, they might have one actual starter left, and the other four are all going to be second, third, or fourth-level replacements. So when you ask why Purdy is having to run more, or why Purdy is not having the success, or why he can't push it down the field, it's because this offensive line is dealing with injury on top of injury on top of injury. I would say their offensive line is dealing with injuries at the same level of the Detroit Lions defensive line, with Aiden and Aleem, you know, down for the year. That's the same level of guys. You've lost potentially your top two. And maybe your third might be out, and so they're hurting. And if their offensive line is hurting, it's going to impact the run game. It's going to force them to continue to go with quick throws, distribute the ball, try and get yak. and it's going to take away their ability to go downfield. It could take away their run game. And if that happens, it's going to take away their ability to have sustained drives and their inability to finish and score points. And that's this offensive line, in my opinion, could be a massive key to their offense being able to put up, you know, any number of points. And so if they get McKivitz back, if they get Burford back, well, now it's a little bit more manageable and maybe they can have a little bit more success. But if Burford can't play, if McKivitz can't play, you're talking about three starters that were not, that maybe haven't even played this year on the offensive line for this week's game. And that's a rough boat for San Francisco to be in, because it's just injury after injury after injury for them, and an opportunity for the Lions to, in my opinion, just blitz. Like, if you can't get home with your front four because your front four is not just, you know, they're just not at that level right now, blitz. Test their communication. Put them in stressful situations. Force their backs to stay involved. Force them to add a, to keep more guys in to block, and then you're going to have less skill players out in routes. If I'm Aaron Glenn, I'm going to blitz as much as I can.
Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Along the front line, we have Leonard Floyd, Malik Collins, Jordan Elliott, and Nick Bosa.
Hmm. Bosa has been dealing with an injury, but he's been practicing in full. He should be okay. Leonard Floyd has been dealing with an injury. He's been limited. We'll see if he's able to go. If he does, it'd be a nice upgrade. It'd be a nice, you know, nice talent level for them, be able to up their talent level. They do rotate these guys quite a bit. They will rely on their backups for upwards of 30 to 50% of snaps. So they will rotate at least eight guys through their defensive line to try and keep them fresh. I think Jordan Elliott, in the games that the couple games that I watched, I thought he showed real promise in his ability to penetrate. He could give Graham some problems. And so he's a guy to keep an eye on. He's been injured, but he's been practicing in full. He was a guy that I kind of circled and said, all right, this is a guy I need to pay attention to. If I'm the Lions, I'm not running up the middle much anyways. I'm going to try and get Gibbs on the edge. I'm going to try and get Gibbs into space. And they struggle in that when you can get your speedy backs out on the perimeter. So they had a hard time with A-Chain. Again, the Miami's running back, A-Chain, last week, who's also very fast. He had 120 rushing yards, 70 passing or receiving yards. So like he had 190 yards. That's
and 23 touches.
That's in Gibbs' range, right? Because mm-hmm. Gibbs had 20 something touches last week. I think he had, what do you have? I'm going to look it up real fast. He had 23 rushes plus four receptions. So he had 27 touches. So like if A-Chain can get that on 23 and you give Gibbs 23 to 27, that's in his range as well. So get Gibbs into space and let him attack this defensive line. Slow down they're a one gapping penetrating front. So they're going to try and just pass rush you. So the way you slow down the pass rush, you get the back outside, you force them to chase. And that's how I would attack this defensive front.
Worth noting, the Niners have 35 sacks on the season, puts them a little bit ahead of the Lions that only have 33, so that's about 20th in the league for the Niners. 34 of those 35 sacks come from the defensive line. They have one sack from a linebacker, and that's it. So if they're going to get pressure, it'll only be with their defensive line. Linebacker, okay, I'm sorry. Moving on, linebacker group. There's a lot of injuries, a lot of suspensions here as well. But we've got Demetrius Flanagan Foles, Fred Warner, and D. Winters listed as starters.
They mainly run two. Like
All right.
80% of the time they run two. And if the logic would say it's going to be Fred Warner and D. Winters. But last week they did turn to Flanagan Fowlers first, and then they turned to Winters. I think they learned their lesson and they'll use Winters more. Greenlaw could maybe play, but he missed last week and he's missed both practices this week. So it sure seems like Greenlaw is probably not going to play this week. We'll see. Greenlaw, when he came back from his injury, if you recall, he was the guy who injured his Achilles running out onto the field in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Oh, yep. And it took him like that long to get back. So, and when he came back, he took the spot of Devondre Campbell, who had been starting in Dre Greenlaw's place all season. When Campbell went to the bench because they gave Greenlaw the starting job back, which they absolutely should have because Greenlaw's a fantastic, you know, player and he's been part of their regime for a while and he's a leader. But when Greenlaw came back, Campbell went to the bench and he pouted. And when Greenlaw got hurt and they asked him to come in and play, he refused. And so then they suspended him for the rest of the year without pay. And didn't cut him so he could go somewhere else. Didn't, you know, because that would have also forced them to pay him. So instead they suspended him. And they sent him home without his money. And I think that's probably exactly what he deserved for quitting on his team in the middle of a game. That's unacceptable. Just unacceptable. They benched him for a player who was an established leader who was coming back from injury. And they said, look, we're not, Dre Greenlaw is not going to get Wally pipped by you, Campbell. And so Campbell did not like it. And he quit, took his ball and went home with no money. And so then Greenlaw, of course, gets injured, which is unfortunate for them. And like I said, they'll probably turn to D. Winters. He's also been dealing with an injury, but he has been practicing in full, so they're expecting him to be okay. Flanagan Fowler, he'll see the field 20% of the time, maybe as a third linebacker, maybe 30% of the time, but that's really going to be about it.
Defensive backs will start with the corners, Charvarius Ward, Renardo Green, with the nickel being Diomador Lenore. Also off the bench are Isaac Yadam, Rock Yassin, and Nick McLeod. The safeties will be Talanoa Hufanga and Jair Brown, with Malik Mustafa has picked up a bunch of starts this year, and Tayshawn Gibson Sr. as reserves.
Jair Brown has been limited this week in practice. He was hurt last week, which is why Mustafa got the majority of the playing time last week. Fourth round rookie, and so I think they're kind of mixing him in. Brown's a pretty good safety, so it's not, you know, it's very easily he could be back in the starting lineup again this week. Hufanga is got a wrist issue. He's got a club. And he's the guy they usually drop in the box. So let's talk coverage because they're very good. This is the strength of their entire team is the secondary right now. They only allow 183 pass yards a game, which is third best in the NFL. 6.6 yards per attempt. That's second best in the NFL. They are very efficient with their pass EPA, which is seventh best in the league. They run a lot of zone. They're in zone about 71% of the time. Most of the time they're running cover three when they're in zone. When they do shift to man, it's cover one. Almost all the time it's cover one. They will run some cover four at times as well, which is, again, like that cover three, cover four is a staple of this system. But mainly cover one, mainly cover three. And that means they run a single high on the field almost 60% of the time. And that single high is, again, a defensive set that they've just seen with the Bears. And so the Lions are going to be already have a system in place on how to try and take advantage of this single high coverage. What they'll do is they'll use Mustafa or Brown as their drop back single high. And then they'll drop Hufanga into the box at the linebacker level. That'll give them two linebackers and then a strong safety all kind of in the front of the box. But Hufanga is the guy that will be assigned to covering the running backs a lot of the times. And so he will be a guy who will often shadow Gibbs. And then you add a club on his hand, make it even harder for him to tackle. And Gibbs being the talent he is, and I think Hufanga is going to have a tough road ahead of him in this game if they use Gibbs in the way I think they will. Ward is a solid outside corner. He starts pretty much for them every snap. Lenore is their second best corner. He will spend time on the outside, but he will also spend time in the slot. When they go to three corners, he will drop into the slot, and Renardo Green, another rookie, will play on the outside. If they just go with two corners, it's going to be Lenore and Ward. Lenore has been great this year. He's been their best corner by far. So if they are in nickel as much as we expect them to be, which is going to be like, you know, upwards of like 70%, then we're going to see Lenore versus St. Brown quite a bit. And that's a tough matchup. It's strength on strength. But that also puts Ward or rookie Green trying to guard JMO on the outside, which I think is an advantage for the Lions, especially when they only give him a single high safety that's going to have to cover some ground. And that, again, could be another corner or another safety that's a rookie or an injured second-year player. So there's options on how to beat it, but, man, they play at a high level. It's a bend-don't-break scheme. They will allow you to make the catch in front of them, and then they are good at closing on the ball and breaking it up or closing on the ball and making a tackle. So this is going to be a test of Jared Goff's accuracy and his ability to be patient and just take what's there. The 49ers will give you the short pass because they're so good at anticipating or tackling, whereas Goff is very good at the short pass. On short passes this year, he has his completion percentage is near 74%, which is third in the league. His passer rating's over 125, which is third in the league. His yards per pass are 10.2. Keep in mind, San Fran's is 6.6 against, but Goff is doing 10.2 in these situations. That's fifth in the league. A lot of that is because of the yak from St. Brown. And the 49ers are a top 10 unit overall, but against defending the short area, they're 20th. And that's because they'll allow you to make that catch. And so if the Lions are patient, and they'll take what's there, they'll check it down, run and get 4, 5, 6 yards, check it down, maybe get a couple, get themselves into third downs, well, they'll have a good chance because the Lions they've been very successful. On third downs, the Lions convert almost 47% of the time, fifth best in the NFL. If it goes to fourth down, they convert almost 70% of the time. That's fifth best in the NFL. Whereas the 49ers, they defend third downs at just 42%, 24th in the NFL, and they allow fourth down conversions 62% of the time, which is 19th in the NFL. So the Lions have an advantage in the short game, and they have an advantage converting third downs and converting fourth downs. The question will just become, do the Lions have the patience to just take what's there, move down the field, and not make mistakes? Because that's really what the 49ers count on. They count on you making mistakes. The hard part for the 49ers will be Goff doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So I expect to see a lot of Gibbs. I expect to see them try and stretch the zone with JMO. And I expect them to just dink and dunk with Amon-Ra. And then it just becomes a matter of, can you outpatient them and out accurate, be more accurate than they can be in defending? And can you just execute when you need to? Because if you can get in the red zone, the Lions are wildly successful in the red zone. They're converting touchdowns at almost, again, like 68% of the time. That's fourth best in the NFL. Whereas the 49ers allow a red zone touchdown 65% of the time, which is third worst in the NFL. So if you can get down there, then you can score. And that will be the trick. The Lions will just have to be patient and accurate.
All right. The kicker, let's go to special teams. Kicker's Jake Moody from Michigan. Having a rougher season than he had last year, he's only hit 23 of 30 field goals, so just over 75% of his kicks. And an interesting note, he has not missed a field goal in consecutive games. That's to say, if he missed a field goal in a game, the next week he makes them all, right? Huh. Sadly for the Lions, he missed a field goal against the Dolphins. So his consistency states that he will make all his field goals against the Lions. Oh, and it's actually a 2-to-1 ratio. Like the first 2 weeks of the year, didn't miss a field goal. Week three, missed one. And then it stayed that way so far the rest of the year. Two games, no misses, then a miss. Two games, no misses, then a miss. Or a couple misses. Two games, no misses, then a miss. So
it's consistent.
Consistency shows that he will not miss a field goal in this game. Yeah. Did you want to say something about Jake Moody?
No, I was going to say there's a lot of people calling for him to be gone as well.
He was a big time prospect, and some kickers just have bad years. Like you look at a lot of these kickers that have been around for 15, 16 years, they'll have like a bad year mixed into one of their first couple seasons. And
sure,
I don't know, they probably shouldn't give up on him yet, especially with the team being bad this year. Give him another shot next year.
I think 49ers fans are just, I think they're just in a bad way.
The punter is Pat O'Donnell. They lost Mitch Wishnowsky to injured reserve earlier in the season. He's average, maybe a little less than average, averaging 44.6 yards per punt, only 39 net. Sounds good for the Lions. That's not so great.
Yep.
Kick returner is Deebo Samuel has the most kick returns for the team on the season.
He wants to take it out. If he gets a chance, he wants to run it.
He's a dangerous player. Why wouldn't he? The punt returner is Jacob Cowing, who's returned 27 of the 31 punts that have been returned this season, averaging a little under 10 yards per return. Ricky Pearsall, the rookie, who's only played in 9 games so far, does have 3 returns for 41 yards.
Yeah, both guys are rookies. They both are. Well, they're both. Yeah, that's right. Cowing's a fourth rounder. They're all right. I'm not
big threats.
No.
The long snapper is former Spartan Tabor Pepper. Did he have some sort of controversy this year?
Well, I don't know. He's not playing well, that's for sure.
Maybe that was the controversy. He's not playing well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think some of Moody's kicks have been blamed on him. And maybe he's doing he's got some residual Michigan hate in his blood there or something. I don't know. You know, subconsciously he's trying to force Moody to fail. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, that makes sense to me. All right. That's it. Those are the 49ers.
So I got bad news for you. I won again.
Oh yeah, it's all over. Yeah, I know, I knew that.
I'm now 5 ahead, but technically there's still a chance with potentially 5 or 6 games remaining. Can't be any more than 6 though. So because there can't be any more than 6, you can lose this one. If you win this one, you're hoping,
it's over. I know when the writing's on the wall.
It's weird because we had multiple years of ties, like 4 years of ties or something ridiculous like that. And then you went on a streak where you won 3 years in a row.
I gave up on Patricia early.
And then I won last year, and then I'm winning this year. I'm in a pretty good spot. I was only off by 4 points. I was real close, so it was one of my better ones of the year. And so that means I have to go first. I'm looking at this game at a lot of different levels. I see areas in which the Lions succeed that set up real well right where the 49ers struggle, including, Gibbs on offense, the dissertation I just gave about the short game there a minute ago. And then I don't think San Fran's offense is going to be clicking that much. Even though the Lions front is struggling, that offensive line is in shambles. And I really, and so is the running back room. And so I don't have a lot of confidence that the 49ers can put up many points. So with the Niners not being able to put up many points, you just need the offense to be efficient enough to score a couple of times, a handful of times, and maybe three might do it. And that could win the game. As much as they don't want to talk about it, I also have some Dallas Cowboy vibes in this game. The Lions want to go in and right a wrong, and they aren't, they've been very calm about saying it's just another game, and they feel like they're more mature, and but it's not, they're just looking at the game in front of them, and they've admitted, it'd be nice to win there, but they're not. I think there's more here under the surface than what they're showing the media right now. And I think they want to go in and they want to make a statement. They want to say, it doesn't matter how many players we have on IR. It doesn't matter what happened here last year. We want to go in and we want to just smash you, because Dan Campbell is not just teaching, he's teaching the younger guys, the new acquisitions, how to win. And he wants to show them that he can win with them. And he wants to show them that he can win big with them. And so I'm expecting Dan to go in with a mentality to just want to bury them. And so I'm expecting this game to maybe not be that close. So take the advantages, add everything up, and at the end of the day, I'm going to go with a 31-17 victory with the Lions, two touchdowns, and a comfortable day. And if it's for the number one seed, all the better.
All right, the Lions are going for, there's always some sort of record the Lions are going for every week, it seems. This one is the only 8-0 road record
Oh yeah.
in team history. They're
Yes.
currently 6-2 at home, and they are 7-0 on the road. I was just running through the all-time results just to make sure I was right. I do not see anywhere where the Lions have gone undefeated on the road in their history. So let's go say this will be if they win this game, it'll be the first time they'll ever finish 8-0 on the road. And I think they will. And you said what, 31-17 Lions? No, 31-18 Lions. Gotta start wheel I that wheel I gotta start Price is rating it on you.
I'm really it's got a lot of Dallas vibes to me. It's got a lot of we have a chance to go into the building where we didn't play so hot in the second half and take care of business. So that's what I'm hoping for. They seem to be headed in the right direction. San Fran seems to be heading for the exit, and the Lions will want to go in, and I expect them to be highly motivated to take care of business. So it might even be
Niners,
bigger.
Niners definitely playing for pride here. Yeah, we'll see. You in the off, and we see that offensive line that San Francisco is going to roll out there, and it looks like this massive weakness, massive advantage for the Lions. And we've seen this before this season where it turns out not to be this big, massive advantage. So I'm not buying that yet, but I'm definitely hoping you're right that they've quit on the season. It's a big revenge game for the Lions, and it will be a no sweat Monday night for all of us.
And hopefully, if the Packers can do their job, a very exciting night for us as well.
Right? Yeah. Oh, that, well, that would be outstanding. But it I have a feeling that that's not going to happen. Why would anything good happen to the Lions? Best season ever. I know there's a lot going right for the. I don't want to be so gloomy about it. They're 13-2. Like they're doing everything right on the field, yet all of these outside forces are against them. It seems, you know, they're 13-2, greatest record in team history. Oh wait, there's another team in the division that has the exact same record they do, and like oh you know like teams have injury problems. Maybe they have 15 guys on IR. Well, no, this team has 22 of them on it. There's all these outside forces that are, you know, making this harder on the Lions than it has to be. Why can't they be 13-2 and be in the NFC South where the season would all be over for them? You know?
Be like Kansas City where they're
right, where you can't even make.
Yeah, can't do anything.
Clinch home field advantage. They can't score 30 points, yet they only have one loss. Why can't it go that way? But I guess, you know, like if they're going to do it, they have to face and slay every demon along the way. I guess if there's a way the Lions have to do it, this is the way they're going to have to do it.
They're making their way through it, too, man. Demon after demon. This is one of the last ones.
Nah, there's a bunch left.
Yeah, but this is a big one.
This is another big hurdle to cross. And I hope they do it on Monday. And I hope, it's a breeze for that, like that the Vikings have already lost and they can, you know, start locking things up early. It would be great. Be a nice late Christmas present.
Very excited.
Yeah. All right. Ratings. We got a new one that I did not notice last week from JT Anderlow. He's a Uber exiled in Cheesehead Country, and he loves the podcast, gave it 5 stars. So, JT, sorry we missed that last week, but, you know, thank you for the great review.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them that I either overlooked or not paid attention to. Someone that was apologizing to me because you are their favorite podcast host in Lions podcast. And so I thought that was a nice congratulatory, well-deserved honor that you got recognized for.
I appreciate it.
And I guess I had, like, I knew we were climbing on Spotify, but I guess I didn't really realize how much. We're like at like 450 or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's really booming on Spotify. If that's the only platform that we're getting updated on, I guess that's the one that does have to make the move.
It's crazy because I feel like we were at like 200, like at the beginning of the season, and maybe we weren't, but that's what it felt like anyway. And
you're right. It's really busted its way up a lot faster than Apple Podcasts because we weren't on Spotify for a few years, obviously.
Right.
And it's really moving along ever since we've
been on. Fantastic. It's fantastic.
But we were like people already knew about us when Spotify came around. Whereas now with the Apple Podcast, and we're on a bunch of these services. These are just the two big ones we're talking about here.
Right.
But Apple Podcasts, we were on it from the beginning, and so you know the march was slow. Slow and steady.
Yeah. All right, you looking forward to any college games?
No, I mean, you know, the Spartans don't play. I mean, I'm looking forward to all of them. It was a fun first round of playoff games. It's just that those stadiums, they are not built for this weather. Like they're like Notre Dame Stadium, Ohio Stadium, Penn State's stadium, State what is that called?
Yeah, State College. So that's a city, right? But
That's
Beaver
the city.
Stadium
I can't,
or whatever.
Beaver
It is.
Stadium. That's right. Yeah. They're all like open and exposed to the elements as much as
Oh, yeah.
can be. Just like
Yeah.
Michigan Stadium, just like Spartan Stadium, they're all the same. There's like nothing covering those fans. Wind can whip right through there because like there would only be one crappy game a year, you know, crappy weather
Right.
game a year traditionally. And now here they are hosting these playoff games in this terrible December weather, you know, where it's so cold, which worked in their favor because, you know, the for SMU and Tennessee, and, you know, Indiana's a northern school as well. So not as much for Notre Dame, but like you had these southern schools come up and not be able to handle the cold, which, you know, of course, Big Ten fans have been saying forever, you know, we always lose in those bowl games. Wait till you come up here and have to play us, that, you know, which worked out in their favor. But and this could be just a 1 year thing. It's interesting.
It'd be
it's an interesting,
interesting
to, playoff.
I'd be inclined to see them dome these games, neutral field them from the jump instead of doing home field.
That's probably where we're headed, but because it is weird that like the top four seeds won't get to host a game at home, you know, like they're even though Boise probably shouldn't be one of the top four seeds, but they're not playing on the blue turf. You know, they're not playing in, you know, in Athens. They're not playing in Outzen Stadium out
are
in
you,
Eugene.
are you a fan of the lower level, quote unquote, teams like Boise, like just getting in, or do you think,
Oh,
like, should it be like the four, like the 12 best, regardless of like what conference you played in? Because like the argument was, Indiana didn't play anyone, therefore Indiana shouldn't have been in that spot to get blown out anyways. So I don't know. I'm interested. Do you think it should be the little guys should get the fair shake, or should it just be you want to see 12 best?
Well, one of the little guys should get a fair shake because you get, because there's 12 teams. There is room for one of them. There is room for a Boise State. I'm not saying they should be the four seed just because of how the rankings worked out at the end of the season for the conferences and all that. But I they do deserve a place at the table. You know, the group of five conference seed, the best one of all of them should definitely get in. As far as like the Indiana's making it, like they do have to fix the selection of the teams, it seems like, because Indiana didn't play anybody, right? And then it showed against Notre Dame, and even Tennessee really didn't play anybody, and it showed against Ohio State, and same thing with SMU, and it showed against. But so, and who did Texas? Why am I blanking on who Texas played? Did Texas even play? Am I screwing up? Because
oh, maybe no, I said Texas earlier, but I might have been wrong.
Clemson played at Texas.
Clemson.
Yeah. So, but like they don't pick the teams like how they pick the NCAA basketball tournament teams,
right?
Where they go into the quad wins, right? Where if you win in quad one, it means more than winning in quad two, quad three. That's probably what they should do in college football as well. Like their wins should be weighted, and so then therefore, if you do play a tougher schedule, like it'll help you if you get some wins, you know, and it'll show. And then B, if you lose, it won't matter as much, like, because it is promoting the idea of play nobody because it'll help you get in, and it probably shouldn't be that.
I agree. I wonder, maybe they do like a play-in game during.
They're going to love to do that. Add more games.
During championship week, like if you like two lower level teams get a play in. I really think they're trying to make it more like college basketball, but it's not. You're never going to have that same energy, the same volume.
Yeah, no, you will not.
It's volume of games. It's
there's more Davids
frequency. Like, yeah, exactly.
There's a bunch of Davids to root for, and on top of it, a few of them are going to win, and it's just kind of fun. And I think it would be the same in football, but it'll just be one David winning, and it's never going to be the same as the college basketball tournament,
right?
Unless they do put, you know, 64 team playoffs.
Start the playoff in early November.
You could be like, we're going to eliminate all non-conference games, just play a conference schedule
Right.
and then abbreviate the conference schedule on top. Instead of playing nine, we'll only play eight games, and then half the teams in college football make the tournament. One thing that's been good, and but long term, who knows, is that with the NIL, with how everything's changing, the lower tier schools haven't been totally left out in the wilderness. Some of them actually have been helped. You could argue that teams like Army and Navy kind of helped by the fact that like their guys stick around, so they kind of have more continuity than a lot of these other teams, and they're getting some wins. And the same could be true for a lot of those schools, or they're able to pick off some players from the Power Five schools who aren't playing, and they're helping out. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, but right now it's not a big negative yet for the smaller schools.
Could they go the other way? Could they, is 12 too many? Should they eliminate those bottom four and just go with eight?
They're never going to go the other way. It's
No, I don't think so
inventory
either.
of games that they can charge money for. Like,
Yeah, 100%.
we're at 12. It's only going to get bigger. It's not going to get smaller. They could. I mean, they could go smaller, but I
It's
mean,
like the
but for
NFL. It's
me,
like what we talked about with the NFL. It's all profit margin at this point, right?
but for me, if you're going to go smaller, go back to two. We're just going to pick what we think the two best teams are, and then let the controversy, roll down. But you probably would get, because then it would just basically turn into the Big Ten champion versus the SEC champion every year. At least where college football's at right now, that can always change. But and maybe that's what the Big Ten and SEC want. Maybe they'll break off one day. But I don't know. With the way it's kind of running now, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. We'll see.
So
We'll see
let's.
if Arizona State or Boise could make some noise on January 1st.
So it's so the Saturday games this week and back to the NFL all have impact on the AFC playoff seeding, but the AFC is pretty much set. You have Kansas City as the one seed, Buffalo has clinched their division, Texans clinched their division. Baltimore's currently ahead of Pittsburgh, but both have clinched a playoff spot. That only leaves two spots open. The Chargers can clinch with a win tomorrow or on Saturday over, I think they play the Patriots, so that should be like,
Right.
should call that should take up that sixth
Well,
spot.
I was going to say you can't call it because it's in New England. They're
Yeah,
playing a
well,
little better with Drake. What's
right,
his name?
so
Drake
May,
May. I was going to
yeah.
call him Mayo. I'm like, no, the coach's name's Mayo. Drake May.
I think LA will clinch tomorrow. Then that leaves
Harbaugh.
Denver versus Bengals.
So they can Denver can clinch tomorrow with a win as well, then.
Correct. Denver can clinch tomorrow with a win, but if the Bengals win,
They're still alive.
keeps hope alive for them, for the Dolphins and the Colts as
Right.
well. And then Denver will go into the last week and they have to face KC, but KC's already locked everything up.
Yeah.
So who knows what they'll even play. So it looks like it's really slanted towards the Chargers and the Broncos getting those last two spots, even though there's still an option for some fun chaos that takes them into week 18. But the AFC's almost set. Could be set by Saturday, end of Saturday. NFC's a lot different. You got the Lions, Eagles, Vikings, and Packers all clinched, but that's 1, 2, 5, and 6 seeds. The West and the South are wide open right now. The Rams, like we talked about earlier, could clinch tomorrow. I'm sorry. They can't clinch tomorrow. If they win tomorrow on Saturday, then they need help with other teams winning their games over Sunday and Monday in order to help them get to where they need to be in order to clinch. Real tough. It's going to be tough for them to clinch. If they can't clinch, then that leaves the door open for a week 18 finale between the Rams and the Seahawks, which we talked about, which makes that an exciting game in week 18. The Falcons are at 8-7, and they're holding off the Buccaneers, who are at 8-7, and they have a tiebreaker. I haven't looked at what they have, what they're doing, but I know the Falcons, or what they have in Week 18, but I know the Falcons play the Commanders this week, and the Commanders are just a win away from clinching themselves. So it's a big game between those two teams. I think that's a Sunday night game, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah.
Commanders, Falcons, Sunday night.
So Atlanta will be looking to have to, you know, they're going to be putting their all into it, trying to get a win to stay ahead in their division. Whereas Washington will be looking to try and clinch a playoff seed. So that should be a very entertaining Sunday night game, and two rookie quarterbacks as well, which makes it more exciting. So, but if Washington ends up locking that spot up, then it just becomes Rams, Seattle, and then can the Falcons hold off the Bucks? Because the Bucks this week, they don't have a hard schedule. They play the Panthers, and then they play the Saints. Yeah, so the Bucks should be favorites in both those games. Whereas Atlanta, like I said, plays Washington, and then they play the Panthers. So if Atlanta can get the win over the Commanders, they should be able to lock it up in Week 18 as well. So it's very interesting to see how it's all going to shake out. And the reason I think we need to like kind of focus a little bit on this is because if the Lions do end up losing and end up in the five seed,
that was the question I was going to have for you.
They're going to face the Falcons or the Bucks. And I tell you what,
on the road,
I would rather face Atlanta than I would the Bucks, because the Bucks are one of two teams that beat you this year. You know what I mean?
But one could argue that like the Lions know what they screwed up and know what they'd have to do to beat the Bucks. I would rather play the Falcons too. Like the Buccaneers are much more capable of scoring a lot of points than the Falcons are. Mm-hmm. But maybe Michael Penix, he's going to be a revelation at quarterback. Who knows?
Either way, NFC is a little tighter at the bottom here. Lots of unsettled because you don't know who's going to host the 3 and 4 seeds. And so it should be some entertaining football over this weekend. And we'll know a lot more. But I think inevitably we're going to have 3 or 4 games going into Week 18 that are still like going to determine playoff seeding, which makes it for some fun football.
Yeah, and it's crazy how we have that around here now. Where
I know
the line, you know, for how many years you'd sit back and watch these playoffs or leading up to the playoffs and the playoffs themselves, and you're like, hey, no, it's good football, it's fun to watch, and then now your team's right in the middle of it. Lions are right in the middle of it, and every game, not every game, but a lot of other games have a big effect on, you know, what happens with the Lions. So
yeah,
this is great. Savor it while it lasts. We are in the good times right now.
Yes.
They won't last forever, so enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Smell the roses.
Right.
That was it. That was the last thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that's all I had too. We've gone probably for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be it for us today. So until next time, let's go Lions.